Welcome back to Morning Talk on the Talk of Mid Utah, KSVC 980 AM and 100.5 FM. Robert Lovell with you alongside Porter Huntsman. And it's a bonus interview that we got today in the 9 o'clock hour as we're joined by Sevier School District Superintendent Kay Douglas, along with two individuals from the Central Utah Public Health Department, Nate Saline and Alicia Beckstead. So, Superintendent Nate and Alicia, glad to have you along with us here this morning.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Now we've got, of course, the last 36 hours have kind of been a whirlwind, not just in the here locally, but throughout the country. And with all the different suspensions of activities, postponements, cancellations, school closings up north, some schools, universities going strictly online. And so I want to get to your guys' perspective on where we're at here locally with our local schools and the decisions that you guys have obviously had to make and be a part of over the course of the last, about 36, 48 hours. It's been a longer process than that for you guys, I know, but it's all come down in the last 36 hours. So first off, Superintendent, go ahead and tell us what you sent out to parents and students and faculty and staff yesterday and kind of walk us through the process of how that came about.
Yeah, first off, thanks for having us on. I mean, I really hope that everyone's listening out there today more than ever. Our purpose today is just to communicate and help everyone gain a better perspective and a better understanding of why decisions are being made. Our letter, and I hope all of our listeners have had a chance to see it. This is a good opportunity to remind people the best place for updated coronavirus information is coronavirus.utah.gov. That one website, and I think the Central Utah Public Health folks would agree with me that that's updated. It's a live website. There's a lot of people that are collaborating on that website, and that's where you're going to find the facts. The most important thing for me in this whole discussion is to remember what we are teaching our children by how we react. I just can't say that enough that as you look at the country and how people are reacting to this threat or this difficult time, let's teach our kids that the right way to react is with reason and rationality and open-mindedness and collaboration. And we work together. We don't panic. We don't go into riot mode and panic. And I think our words and our deeds and our actions, we can do better than what we're even doing now. We can solve problems and threats with open-mindedness and reason. That's the first thing that I want to make sure everyone realizes to really think. The second thing, so just kind of going through our letter that we sent home, our communication to parents and our staff and students, is to really work, first off, to get the facts, like I mentioned, that website. Next, and we've been reminded several times with our relationship with the public health department, is improve our social hygiene. That's what I like to call it. We can all do better with distances and with washing our hands appropriately. And when we can't wash our hands, using hand sanitizer. And when we're sick, we stay home and we stay away from large groups. Just that's the second most important message I think that we're learning from this, is to improve our social hygiene. There have been some recommendations given by the governor's office and his task force for the coronavirus. And there have been recommendations given in conjunction with the Utah Public Health Department, our local health department. And specifically, those are to not congregate in groups larger than 100. I think our listeners are probably very familiar with those things. Canceling out-of-state travel, assemblies, those types of things. And then, I guess, lastly, we kind of wrap it up by saying that we really want to take a proactive and preventative approach. I think some of the things that are being recommended that our school district has every intention of following are seemed to be overreacting or extreme. And they're really not when you have all the information in front of you. I hear a lot of people say, well, I'll be fine. If I get this particular virus, I'll be just fine. I'll survive it. That might be the case for you, but there's other loved ones that we all have that have underlying health conditions or maybe, the elderly or the young, that it could cause difficulty for them and it could overwhelm our healthcare system. And so we've got to be preventative and proactive in how we respond. And that's why you're seeing things like prom is really an emotional topic that's difficult, or all these sports, the spring sports, we have students that have worked their entire lives to participate and it's very emotional and difficult. But we're doing the best we can to follow the guidelines, and we're doing the best we can to explain why we're following the guidelines. So I hope that helps.
Yeah, and then maybe the key here, and Nate and Alicia, you can jump in here on this as well. These guidelines that have come out, what is the reason for following these guidelines to the way that we are here locally?
Yeah, I think the real reason is prevention. And as the governor said yesterday in his press conference, that these are preemptive measures to make sure that we limit the spread of this virus when it does come to our area. Right now, we do have coronavirus or COVID-19 in our state. We have had cases here and there, but we haven't had community spread to this point that we've been able to identify. And in our local area, in the six counties that our health department covers, we have not had any cases as of yet. And we're fortunate in that. And I think there are a lot of things that help in our local area that help us to not be more susceptible. You know, we're not as densely populated. There are a number of other things that go along with that. But the biggest thing for us is looking at this whole situation and making sure that, you know, we do everything that we can to make sure that when this virus does hit our area, because we know it will, that we are taking some measures that will help to minimize its spread. If we can minimize the spread, let things change, let the virus run its course, we'll be in a lot better position to protect the health of our residents. And particularly, as the superintendent mentioned, the health of those who are most susceptible. Right now, we see that COVID-19 affects those who are 60 and older. They're far more susceptible to it, and then people with underlying health conditions. And for those reasons, we have to take measures that are going to specifically protect those individuals. And that's a community thing. You know, a lot of times when we talk about interventions with public health, we focus on a community health approach, where we all do things as a community that help to keep everyone healthy. You know, that's why we talk about vaccinations. That's why we talk about, in this situation, social distancing. We talk about some of these measures that will help to protect everyone. Now, it's true for the majority of people that get COVID-19, the symptoms will be mild to moderate. I mean, the data we're looking at right now suggests that 90 to 95% of cases will have mild to moderate symptoms, not requiring hospitalization. That's great news for us. However, it's that other 5 to 10% that we really worry about. And if the 90 to 95% of mild or moderate cases are not taking appropriate actions, staying home when you're sick, washing your hands, things like that, that virus spreads easily and can impact seriously those people who are more susceptible.
Yeah, and that's obviously a key point there. And I know other people have asked the question of, well, if we're not congregating in groups of 100 or 20 for the 60 and older, what's the reasoning for keeping the schools open then? And Superintendent, maybe you can answer that one.
Yeah, I feel like that's the question I'm getting asked the most. And it like I said, these are emotional things. These right. are very difficult. And I totally understand that. I have a junior that will be – had planned to go to junior prom. I have a middle school student that – has worked really hard on basketball, and basketball tournaments are being canceled and different things. The just like you said, Robert, the number one question I'm being asked is, if we're not congregating in groups of 100, why are schools staying open? And the answer to that is really pretty simple if you think about it. What we're trying to do is avoid travel where large groups of people are coming and going. So prom is a good way to explain this. With junior prom, I think we could continue in most schools if it was only for the students. If it was just the prom date and the prom participant and they had prom and that was it, likely we could continue. But prom isn't just for the students. I don't know if they realize that. I've talked to a lot of angry students in the last 10 hours. It's not necessarily for them. And someday they'll realize that prom is as much for their mom and their dad and their grandparents and their loved ones as it is for them. It's a special ritual that happens and has happened in our society for a long, long time. So what instead of just having a group of students together like a regular school day, and K-12 students don't tend to travel outside of the valley very frequently, especially while school is in session. So there's another point right there. School's not in session, then people likely will want to do something. They're either going to congregate together in other places other than school, or they're going to start traveling around, and then we just up the risk again. So you really have to think, if you're a student, why am I still going to school? Well, if you're healthy, there's no reason not to continue to go to school. generally at school, you're not in groups larger than 100 as it is, you know, and we're even taking precautions as a school district to try to minimize lunchtime and minimize recess time and try to keep the groups smaller. And we're not perfect.
You're going to try to stagger those throughout the day.
Staggering those things throughout the day. But that's the best explanation. And I hope that all of our listeners are really thinking about that and trying to help understand where we're coming from. Because that's it's a logical question. Well, I go to a school with 600 students. That's still on. Why can't I go to
the concert,
a baseball game?
Yeah.
Travel is a big piece of that. And then let's just remember that most tournaments, events, prom, they're not just about the student. They're about lots of other people that are wanting to be involved in that particular activity. Another message of hope, you know, in 2 weeks, we're going to know a lot more now than we do today. And those recommendations were to analyze, you know, these things are happening for the next 2 weeks. Then we'll reanalyze and we'll determine what, you know, if further restrictions or cancellations will take place, or if, you know, fewer restrictions or cancellations will take place. So we'll know a lot more then. Help me there. Did I miss any pieces there that you could help?
Well, some of the other things that you look at when you close, you know, the K-12 schools, you know, that I'm sure you guys have looked at too, is it's not just that you have you're feeding those kids twice a day. You know, there's lots more to look at school closures. And in the past, they've tried school closures, you know, when we've had that H1N1 outbreak, and they found it wasn't really effective because all of the kids congregated and it didn't really make a difference as far as, you know, school closures. It didn't seem as effective, you know, in that age group because, you know, parents still had to work. You know, there's a lot of things that you look at whenever you try to do school closures in the midst of outbreaks and different things like that you have to take into consideration during those times. So there's a lot of things to consider, not only, you know, just closing the schools and, you know, parents are working, what are you going to do for daycare? You know, all of those different things that you're looking at. There's a lot of other things that, you know, that the superintendent and everyone has to look at as far as what would happen in a school closure.
Yeah, a lot of the things that come to mind for me is I get questioned all the time on snow days. I just get, you all know I'm a big Twitter guy. I tweet out, I try to communicate as much as possible. I love feedback. And whenever it snows more than 3 or 4 inches, the students just, they start tweeting me, "Hey, snow day, come on, superintendent." And it's funny.
Did you say we need 4 feet to get a snow day?
That's what I like to say, because these same variables come into play that Alicia mentioned is caregiving for the children. 50%+ of our students are receiving their meals at the school, congregating anyways, travel. I always think about those. I see their faces. I don't know if a lot of people realize that, but we have 5,000 students. And when I'm in difficult decision mode, I see their little faces and I really get worried about students getting lost to and from school in a snow day or getting left behind and not having the care they need. And it really, we have to weigh some of those variables that have already been mentioned when we're looking at a dismissal or a closure, for sure.
You know, and we are still planning and preparing that if this situation evolves as it's rapidly changing, we've seen that even in the past couple of days, as the situation changes, there may come a time where either us as a local health department work with the school districts to talk about closure. It could be that we look at, you know, the state school board could come in and make some recommendations. The governor could make another order from him that would say, you know, schools are going to close. There are a lot of variables there. So, you know, we are actively engaged in planning for that type of a scenario. But again, to speak to those public health measures, a lot of what we're focusing on is working with the schools to make sure that they're minimizing the congregating within schools, where most of the kids spend the bulk of their day in their classrooms in smaller numbers. We're able to adjust things like was mentioned, you know, recess times and lunch times and things like that to limit congregating, and that's really what our focus is, and that helps us with those public health interventions to minimize the spread of this illness.
So you might have just kind of talked about it a little bit there, but of course, I heard in the news conference yesterday that school districts are obviously supposed to take advice from the local health department and weigh on your expertise here. And so with that in mind, what are we looking for if we do get to that point? Is it local cases? How do you guys determine when we might decide, all right, it's better now to look at maybe possibly closing the schools?
Yeah, the biggest factor there is going to be community spread. And right now, we don't have any cases, like I mentioned, in our district, but we also are not seeing community spread throughout the state. That'll change at some point. Depending on the severity of that, the severity of symptoms, the severity of illness, the impact that it puts on the entire healthcare system, those will all factor into that. Right now, we're working with the governor's task force pretty closely to develop some guidelines that would be used uniformly for schools across the state. And obviously, those are going to change rapidly depending on how this virus evolves. But we're working on having some of those benchmarking items so that when we get to a point, we can identify and say, these are the reasons we're closing the schools. At this time, though, we just don't see that there's a need to be doing that. That could change in a matter of weeks. It could change in a matter of days. We just really don't know as the situation evolves. As people get ill and people and start to come down with this virus, we're going to have to reevaluate. And we're going to have to look at how this impacts our entire system as a whole, not just the schools, but how it impacts everything in our community.
All right. Once again, we've been joined by Nate Saline and Alicia Beckstead from the Central Utah Public Health Department, Kay Douglas, Superintendent of Sevier School District. Anything else you want to make sure our listeners are aware of and that they're paying attention to over the course of not just today, but going forward?
Yes, I think the biggest messages we're trying to put out from public health, again, we've talked about hand washing, we've talked about proper hygiene, we've talked about sanitizing surfaces that you constantly touch. You think about these are all the things we tell people during flu season, right? They're the same types of interventions. We want people to stay home when they're sick. We want employers to be willing to work with their staff. I mean, the governor asked that employers who could have staff telecommute to have them do so. Where that's possible, those types of things will help in reducing the spread of this virus. But one of the other bigger things we've had a lot of inquiry about is, what do I do if I think I have COVID-19. What do I do if I'm symptomatic in this way or that way? And we really want to get this message out that you need to call a healthcare provider. Do not go into the hospital. Don't go into a healthcare provider. Call ahead. The worst thing that could happen for our healthcare system is that people who have COVID-19 just show up in the facilities and potentially spread it around to whomever. If you call ahead and consult with your healthcare provider or with the hospital, they can walk you through the metrics of whether or not, based on your symptoms, travel history, exposures, all of those things, we can work with people to figure out whether or not they are someone who needs to be tested for COVID-19. And if they do, they can make arrangements so that your exposure would be limited, whether you drive up in a car and somebody comes out and meets you to take some lab samples, or they have you enter through a separate entrance so you're not coming through the general public entrance. There are a number of ways that our facilities are planning for this. Our clinics and hospitals are working on this diligently. And in order to protect those healthcare workers and the rest of the public that are at their facilities, we have to make sure that people are calling ahead and making sure they're getting that guidance. And the other part of that is that obviously if you have severe a severe medical situation, you're under absolute respiratory distress, you would need to come in and you couldn't necessarily wait and do all of that. But it's still trying to communicate as much as you possibly can with these healthcare facilities will make a big difference. I mean, most people will go home. This will be like a common cold or flu, and those mild symptoms. A lot of people will have that, and they'll be able to just stay at home, get some rest, keep up on your fluids, take Tylenol or ibuprofen for your fever, and the symptoms will resolve. And that's where we need to make sure that we're not overwhelming that healthcare system. It's so limited, and it's a critical infrastructure in this type of a situation.
Yeah, very good, great points. Go ahead, Alicia.
Yeah, and there's also another option that they're recommending as well, as there's the telehealth medicine that you can utilize as well. I know of Connect Care. There's different options that they can utilize where you can download an app on your phone or different devices that you can connect with a doctor at your house, and you can be, you know, triaged with that option without even having to go into a facility or anything like that. And they're really recommending that people utilize that option as well. Also, and if someone is sick, they're recommending, you know, to not return to work till you've had been fever free for at least 72 hours or symptom free for 10 days, you know, like your cough, your fever, or, you know, like once you've been exposed, that kind of stuff, 10 days or 72 hours without that fever is what their recommendation is. But those are just some of the, you know, ways of preventing the spread or overwhelming our local clinics and hospitals and things like that.
Anything you want to add, Superintendent?
Yeah, I just wanted to two quick things. First off, just thank our public health officials. And again, we're so fortunate to live in this valley. We've been talking about this for at least 8 weeks, probably 10, 12 weeks, and meeting and visiting with each other, with all of our, and that's our hospital workers, our private and public health officials, all of our law enforcement. I don't think there's better collaboration that takes place any place in the world. We're so fortunate to work well together. We all know one another. We all have each other's cell phone numbers. We're friends and neighbors and good people here. So thanks. What a blessing that is to have that collaboration. And then please, just to all the listeners, please communicate this. That's what I think the greatest challenge of my life has always been, communication, helping everyone understand and gain perspective. Now that we've offered this perspective with you today, please share it. You know, when you hear someone make a comment like, hey, I'll survive this just fine, say, wait a minute, there's more to this. Share what you've learned with your kids, with your neighbors. I think we can all better understand that. And if you have a question on facts, then jump on that coronavirus.utah.gov and get the facts. Rather than just make kind of, I don't know what I would call maybe extreme statements or, and in all reality, there's a lot of really smart, good people that are making recommendations and we're just trying to implement those recommendations in a proactive, preventative way versus reactive way. So yes. It's a blessing to live where we do, and we can do better in communicating. So help us out there, listeners. And then, of course, as always, thanks for all of your support, for what all your listeners do for our schools and our community. Our website, severesd.org, has all of this information there as well. So thanks for having us on. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on again. Superintendent Ked Douglas of Sevier School District and Nate Selene and Alicia Beckstead from the Central Utah Public Health Department with us this morning as we discuss what's going on locally with COVID-19, the coronavirus, and especially that's how it has been affecting and will affect the schools going forward. That's going to have to do it for our show today. We are short on time, that will wrap it up here for us here on Morning Talk on KSVC 980 AM.